Hello, and welcome to a special bonus episode of the East Anglian Theatre Podcast. In the absence of anything original to say, hello again. This is your friendly neighbourhood podcast devoted to promoting all things theatrical in our region. My name is Ray Tempesta, and I'm the fool that devised this promotional tool for East Anglian Theatre. In every episode, I try to bring you an interview with those involved in a local company or production and take a brief look at some other things happening at theatres in our region over the coming weeks. This episode, however, is a hastily cobbled together one for the purposes of putting out a last-minute interview, so the upside is that you don't have to listen to much of my crappy flannel either side of the interview, but the downside is that I've not had much time to edit the audio, so the quality isn't quite what I'd like. Anyhow, the interview this time involves a couple of established stars in Gillian Bevan and Michael Higgs, who are two of the three cast members in the Theatre Royal Bury St Edmunds production of The Children, directed by Owen Calvert-Lyons. To give you a bit of background, I went along to go and see the production around a week ago, which was fantastic, by the way, and you can read the review on my website, eatpod.co.uk. Anyway, I had the opportunity to meet the cast afterwards, and I'm not sure how, but against all odds, I must have charmed someone, as they agreed to an interview with me. And that was in spite of me fangirling on Gillian about how much I loved her in Teachers, which is one of my absolute favourite TV shows of the last 20-odd years. I also loved Michael in the more recent series, Agatha Raisin, with Ashley Jensen on Acorn TV, but I played it cool with him. Anyway, given there's not much time left in the run of the show, I thought it was best to get this episode out while there's still an opportunity for you all to see it. So, without further ado, which is a shame because I do so enjoy and I do, here's an interview with Gillian Bevan and Michael Higgs. Hi there, Gillian and Michael. I appreciate you talking to me between shows when you know, minds might be a little bit frazzled. So you obviously did the afternoon performance just as now. How did that go?
It was pretty good, actually.
That was pretty good.
They were very laughy.
They were good audience.
Yeah. I think word is getting round and Bury's such a friendly town.
Yeah.
You know, you're walking down the street and people are waving across
Stop
the road.
I know I had somebody beeping in the car.
Yes.
And I waved back thinking, I don't know who that is.
Yeah, but they'll go, we loved it!
So that's been, that sort of affirmation is always nice.
Well, that's good. It's good. Being well received. On a day like today, when it's a two-show day, how do you remain in the zone, as it were? Presumably not by talking to some idiot about his podcast.
Yeah.
Well, I like matinees, and I'm very grateful. I mean, particularly, like, today's a rainy day. So anybody that has bothered to leave the house to get here and come to see live theatre, you just think, well,
yeah.
Good for them, really.
Mm.
Especially, and I think people do have a hunger for it after the
lockdown. I think that's true. I think that is true.
Live performance.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you're doing a certain show, you think, "Oh God, I've said this.
Have we done this before?" Yeah,
yes.
There can be.
You get a bit of
Jambu-ish. Yeah, you have to be careful about that, don't you? But I really enjoyed this afternoon.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
I forgot that I had two people in as well. So.
Does that ever put you off? The idea that you have people in.
Not really. I mean, well, okay, so my wife and daughter were in last weekend, Saturday night, and I was a little bit like, I just wanted it to be good, and then there's that thing of like, when you try and it's too hard, you know, I don't know, that's good, you've got to try and just
and also,
put it out of your head. All
we haven't
stuff.
Done that many shows, though.
No, we haven't, it was only our third show, so.
Yeah. It's lovely stuff, obviously. The writing is magnificent, but it is a bit elusive sometimes. And I think we've all come up with substitute words again
to
make the other people laugh and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, actually, I mean, you're obviously now sort of about halfway through the run.
We're over
halfway through. Yeah, I mean, on a run such as this, do you find after each performance you're kind of analysing how it went, looking for ways you can tweak and perhaps polish your performance, or is it a case of once you've got it nailed down in your head,
it's absolutely what we do. As soon as we come off stage,
there's a little conference, a sort of debrief.
I'm sorry about that bit. Because it feels like we're all in a sort of hostage situation, the three.
I mean, what's one of the strange things is that within the play, Lucy Copeland's written all these overlapping dialogue. So constantly, you know, characters are just talking over each other, yes, on the ends of sentences, cutting each other off.
It's like musical notation.
Which is really hard to learn and do, but we do it. The audiences think that
sometimes
we're just being clumsy and stepping on.
Sometimes they think, well, we thought you were a bit nervous because you kept over.
I don't know if you ever read reviews.
No.
I reviewed the show earlier on the week, and that was something that I noted that I found really impressive, that the talking over, because there is a temptation when when someone sort of cuts in with a line over the top of yours to sort of just cut your line short. And that's often the way that these shows are written. It's, you know, you've got ellipsis at the end of your sentence, but actually she's producing full sentences, which you have to finish.
Yeah.
And that's really difficult. I mean, you have to have a lot of trust in each other to know that they're going to come in with a cue line, and because you're not, you can't really listen to what they're saying particularly. Yeah. You just have to trust that you get to the end of your sentence. And
well, I think what I love in particularly in the first opening stages between you and Imogen's characters, Hazel and Rose, is that it just kind of, they're not quite connecting. Gives me that constant. It's like, I love that. She's done it.
But it's
quite
nerve,
tricky.
Isn't
yeah.
Because you don't want to make a mess at the top of the show. Although, probably, you know, people wouldn't notice.
There's always a few places where I go, oh, God, I don't know if I'm coming in the right place. Ever. Not just tonight, but ever.
No, we sort of, you just have to get an instinct. I mean, we've rehearsed it enough, probably. I mean, I probably didn't have enough rehearsal, really.
Well, I think you always, okay, 3 weeks isn't.
Well, we had 3 weeks, but we only had 15 days, that's the thing.
And speaking of the children and Lucy Kirkwood's writing, had you come across the play before you got involved in this production?
No, I never heard of it.
I had a friend do it, and she was desperate to get some help reading the other lines and things. So, and
was that the Salisbury?
Yeah. And I just thought, oh my God, this is amazing.
Right.
And they did it at this sort of, while COVID was on, and I was driving to see her. In fact, I was driving to see a matinee, and she phoned me up in floods of tears saying, we've had to cancel, two of the cast have got COVID.
Oh, no.
So,
that's the majority.
Speaking of the small cast, the three of you must have built up quite a close bond, really, although it's been quite a short space of time. No? Is that why Imogen's not coming into this?
Yes. I guess we have. It's been very easy. I don't know. Maybe it's when you get to over 60, there's less ego involved. I'd hope so.
It was lovely, actually.
It's been easy. It's always.
Because I've gone from being like the last origin, I think I was the oldest person in the room.
I'm the youngest in this.
And so it's lovely. Because we all take the piss out of each other's
elbows. Oh, you know what was great? It was on the very first day of rehearsal. It was Jilly's birthday.
Yeah.
And on the second day of rehearsal, it was my birthday. And then exactly a week, the following Monday, was Imogen's birthday. So it was, that was nice.
Yeah, our stars have aligned.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of age, not to make you feel old, but of course the parts you've taken on have been written specifically for people of it.
He bristles.
I bristle because
he's
old. Well, you know what, Lucy Kirkwood writes, she says three characters in their 60s, so lovely. Jimmy has to say, I'm 67, which is spot on, just 67. Imogen says, I'm a 65-year-old, she's not, she's 62. And then she says, I'm recruiting people over the age of 65. And I've always been like, can we just not change that to over the age of 60? Because I'm only 61.
He's going to do his work because of
I'm sure it's not a salient plot point, is it?
No, but suddenly the audience is going, oh, I can't believe that.
He's
far too young. Where's the credibility gone? Jesus.
Presumably it's quite fulfilling to get a much more sort of substantial part, particularly for you, Gillian, because where women, I think, are almost sort of written off and kind of reduced to, I don't know, playing Lady Windbag, you know, of Sullen Saul Hall and bumped off after 10 minutes in a murder mystery.
I've done some really lovely stuff on television, and then suddenly I was only getting things where people have Alzheimer's or Egon Bacardi. That was the stage director's course. Saying she's the sort of woman who has egg on her card. God, it's kind of. But no, it's absolutely great.
Yeah.
To get.
I mean, three stonking parties.
Stonking parties.
They're incredible.
And what, only when she was 32?
Yeah. I mean, the other great thing is that you can sort of play all your bag of tricks, really, because it is funny, but it is also terribly moving and terribly touching, but it is also politically astute and aware, and, you know, trying to warn us of what's coming down the line, whether it's climate change or nuclear accidents or, you know, pandemics or whatever. It's post-pandemic, because it was written before the pandemic, so it's very, very on the nose, I think, really.
And was that a factor in choosing it, or was it just a job?
It's a great kind of that. Yeah, no, that's a major factor, because it is one of those things of how, as a society, we are. I mean, all the soil that we're poisoning, the seas that we're poisoning, all these things, all these chickens that will come home to roost if we don't actually change the way we think about it.
Mm. All these millions of chickens.
Environmental responsibility. This is what she's talking about.
Yeah.
It's nuclear power stations as well, nuclear power, especially here with Sizewell C being developed. And I think, you know, people are very bad-friended today, who's very close to it.
Yeah.
She was saying, yes, Clayton feels very close to home.
Yeah, I think it is, having spoken to a few people afterwards, that they were saying it very much resonates with people around here. At least it's kind of stamping the message home that actually we all have responsibility, regardless of age. You know, obviously this is, the play was given over from the viewpoint of older people, sort of almost like taking responsibility for their actions in the past. Yes, but actually, it's not just a preachy play where
it's not at all.
Where they're pointing fingers.
Into that, I think what she's so brilliant. You've got all these various things. So you've got these, you know, playing out over real time, an hour and 45 minutes, in real time, the whole play, there's no scene change. These three people coming together after 40 years of kind of stuff happening, and it kind of colliding in some sort of Hadron Collider atomic nuclear event that happens on stage in front of you. I think it's genius.
I mean, for a play about nuclear fusion, it's also about the nuclear fusion of
relationships.
The two run side by side.
Yeah, and that's so clever. And I think when it starts off and you're reading, you go, oh, this is great, but what's going on? It's all this lovely, it's funny dialogue and stuff. And then it just becomes more and more layered with the personal histories. And it's just brilliant. And then suddenly you get that kind of reveal halfway through of like, why she's there, and it just explodes.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I can probably speak on behalf of anyone that's already seen it so far. It's one that's probably definitely worth coming to see again.
Well, people have. Yes.
Have they? I mean, yeah.
Lots of people that actually work in the theatre, lots of the usherettes have wanted to come and seen it. And you know, it's like anything. It's like really rereading a great novel, isn't it? You always get more out of it.
Yeah, definitely. And going back to the relationship between the three of you and Imogen as well, it's obviously a big wide world out there, but had you three crossed paths prior to this production?
Mm. I didn't know Michael. I mean, I'd seen Michael on the telly, but I didn't know Imogen, and so that was a great, you know, pull to do it, because I'd love to. I never worked with her, and I wanted to work with her.
Do you find it daunting stepping into a room of well-known actors as opposed to...
I think the rehearsal room is a great level. And all the three parts are sort of, I mean, Michael doesn't come on for a bit, but, you know, basically we've all got stuff of equal stature.
Well, I mean, I sort of, unlike, you know, if I was to step into a rehearsal room, you can't Google me and find out what I've done before. I can have a look and go and see, oh, Gillian's worked on such and such a production, and this is, you know... Oh, that could be quite daunting. Oh, she's worked with so-and-so, that kind of thing.
No, I definitely... I mean, I probably got cast last.
I think you did.
So I knew that it was going to be Jimmy.
Did they not find anyone else? Was that what it was?
I was like, okay. You know, rehearsing, the play's great, I wrote the play, because it does have to fit... You know, when you're choosing to do things, it has to fill a certain criteria, isn't it? So I was like, I love the play. Oh, the cast is good. Oh, it rehearses in London where I live. Yeah. That's brilliant. And then it wasn't, you know, it was only 3 weeks up in Bury. So I was absolutely.
Speaking of Bury, actually, obviously now you've spent probably a little bit more time here than perhaps you might have anticipated, and obviously at the theatre as well. How have you found your experience?
Well, the theatre's fantastic under Owen's direction.
Yeah. Everybody here is just amazing. Welcome, it's so the enthusiasm can't do enough for you. It's just brilliant.
And also, well, that's partly because of Zoe as well, because he's now got his producer, who's a mate of his, Leo, and they work closely together, and that seems to be a pattern. I mean, that's why there's a male and female directorship about to start at the RSC, and I think for running buildings, I think that is the new way forward.
It's absolutely
terrifying and quite lonely, I think, to be an artistic director. You know, you've got somebody as a sounding board and somebody to guide you and have a discussion about it. But also, he's done so much. I mean, every day you walk in the building,
something's happened.
Something is happening in the bar space. That, you know, today they had kids all doing music and dance and things. They're all having a discussion about it. And then there's another toddler group, or there's a dementia group, or there's, you know, there's, it, so it just feels...
It's connected into the community.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I do think Owen has been, and the team, of course, have been very responsible for kind of adding an extra vibrancy to the place that was perhaps missing a few years ago.
And you do need that sort of leadership, I think, especially post-pandemic, really, because it must have been terrible what it was for everybody. I mean, for all of us as actors and things, you know, we all lost, well, I lost all my income, worked in a farm shop for most of the time, I was delivering groceries to people who were vulnerable, who couldn't get to the supermarket. You know, and that was important, and I'm glad I did it. You know, I just wanted to be useful, really, rather than...
Yeah, I remember quite enjoying it, first of all. I remember thinking, ah, the pressures are fantastic, and we don't have to go around to dinner parties and, you know, other people's houses. I'm quite antisocial. The pandemic really made me realise how much I do really enjoy being in other people's company.
Yes, we all need each other.
It gets to a point. Definitely.
Yeah. And just looking back a little bit on your careers, I'm not going to put you on the spot and ask you, you know, a favourite moment or a proudest achievement, but if you could perhaps be transported back to a particular sort of time period in your career, is there a moment you'd choose?
It's normally to do slightly with regret.
Okay.
Things that you kind of go, you know, just, yeah, things that you can't change at all, so it's kind of pointless.
So not so, I wish I'd made more of this, that kind of thing, or...
What?
Or just you know, sometimes it might be like, you know, there's certain points in time it's capturing lightning in a bottle and you think, oh, I wish I could recapture that feeling again.
I don't know, really. I think you carry those things with you.
Yeah.
Somehow. I think you do metabolize them, you carry them with you for going forward. I mean, that's why in some ways, you know, there's things I got offered that I turned down. I think, God, why did I turn that down? That was crazy. That would have been good, wouldn't it? Been all right at the least.
Well, you made the right decision at the right time.
Probably. Yeah, sort of.
I mean, I think we're so lucky being, we can still work. And in fact, as more people fall off the tree, there's probably more work than the older you get. If you're still able to walk.
You can hang in there. Keep your mind.
I have to say, when I started out from drama school, you know, when there was only half as many women as there were men because there weren't enough parts, so we had 10 women and 20 men on my own, mind you. And, you know, like when I first went to the RSC, I didn't speak to anybody. So to sort of think that aged 60, I'd be playing a regendered Cymbeline that is normally played by a man as a woman, and I was the first person to do that in my 60th year. And I'm not on Twitter, but apparently the Twitter sphere went absolutely bananas, and it was in the same year that Glenda did King Lear. And so that was a kind of seismic moment. And, you know, I thought that I would be just taking it easier then. I mean, I've had a couple of things like that in my career. You know, playing a West End lead for 18 months, age 56 and things. And so if you can keep going, and if you can do stuff, add stuff to your box of tricks, I suppose.
Do you do that? Do you constantly sort of look for ways to up your game, is probably the wrong terminology, but sort of almost train?
You do have to. I mean, you know, I've done early on when my kid was little. I set up a radio company and I wrote for the radio and we got commissioned for Radio 4, and I directed for the radio. So that, I was quite proud of that, really, with two other mates. You know, we were the first female independent company to be commissioned for Radio 4 and things. So I've done stuff that I'm quite proud of. Now, they're not, you know, earth-shattering and groundbreaking, but it's about the longevity of a career, I think, really. You have to do bits of writing. And bits.
Well, you do, because I think ultimately any career has sort of peaks and troughs, doesn't it? So you have, and those periods when it's maybe not flowing as much as you would like, the skill and the job almost is not to go insane and despair, to keep creative. And so, I mean, I've been writing now probably for about 6 or 7 years, some screenplays and novels as well, and doing things like pottery. And I do lots, and I exercise, and I think keeping fit's really important part of just your general health, but therefore as an actor, you're just kind of, you know, you're staying in the zone, you're ready, you're always prepared.
It's not just keeping the creative muscles exercises.
No, but it's physically, your physical well-being and also your creative well-being. And that, you know, the problem about being an actor is it's such a reactive profession,
You can't do it.
There's not much you can do on your own. I mean, you can learn speeches and do it, but you're in for an audience of none. But sort of any kind of writing or setting up a repertory company or what have you, I think that's something that younger actors these days do a lot more. They create their own content, and I think that's vital. When we came up, it was just like you went to drama school and you just hope that you would, you know, go get launched out into there, and that's what you do. I'm an actor.
Because in those days, you have to use an equity card. Yeah, there were only a certain limited number of equity cards, so it was like a Willy Wonka's golden ticket if you ever ran into a job from drama school.
And looking back, actually prior to your training, what was it that kind of sparked your interest in performing arts?
I was one of three non-Catholics at a convent school. And we had marvellous English teachers, and we had marvellous biology teacher who was bonkers about Gilbert and Sullivan. So at the age of 12, I played quite a lot of the lead parts, the male lead parts in Gilbert and Sullivan operas at my convent. And that was discovering that I could make people laugh. And then I discovered that I could sing as well, which has been incredibly useful in my career to be able, you know, I've done 8 Sondheim musicals, for instance. And so it's been the difference of being pretty much permanently employed. You know, I've done telly and I've done Shakespeare and I've done all sorts of stuff, but being able to have the joy of doing a musical, particularly a Sondheim musical, has been fantastic for me.
Do you have a favourite? Sometimes, I mean, not necessarily one that you've been in, but did Sweeney Todd.
Sweeney Todd is probably one of the few shows that I'd really love to do again.
Yeah. Who did you play in Sweeney Todd?
Mrs. Lavish. I did that at the Royal Exchange. Amazing. Yeah, loved it.
How about you, Michael?
I think I discovered acting quite relatively late. Because it never occurred to me growing up as a teenager that people did it as a job.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know anybody in the business. I didn't have any connection with it at all. We used to do sketches. We'd act out stuff all the time without just for fun. And then actually my big idea because I grew up in Cornwall for my teenage years, and there was not, I mean, I think now there's a whole drama department at school, but when I was there, they just used to say, anybody being interested in staying behind after school to perhaps be in a production of Midsummer Night's Dream, do that. And I'd be like, no thanks, I'll be playing football on the seafront. So my big idea was moving up to London to work in a recording studio, because I thought I wanted to be a record producer.
Right.
And I got this job in this great recording studio called The Marquee, and worked with brilliant producers and engineers and bands and stuff, but realised quite quickly that being a record producer didn't really fit in with that. It wasn't going to be a lifestyle I particularly wanted. I completely identified with the bands coming in. And I played a bit of guitar, and I thought, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave. I'll carry on doing the job for a bit. But I think I left after about a year and a half. And my big idea was that I was going to just practice guitar, and I was going to be in a band.
Mm.
So that's what I was going to do. And then I thought, oh, it'd be a good idea to do some theatre classes because that will help with being on stage. I think I did some cabaret thing with some friend who was a musician, performer as well. And people kept encouraging me with the theatre stuff. Not really with being in a band so much.
Oh dear.
And I was like going, and people go, you should do this, you should go to drama school, you should, be, you know. And I go, no, yeah, but no, because I want to be in a band, what are you talking about? And I think it was probably took about 4 or 5 months, and I literally woke up one morning just going, oh my God, what have I been thinking? Why am I sort of dismissing this? I absolutely love it, because the more... I kept finding out more about it, reading books on it, doing classes, and just was hoovering it up and realised that I just absolutely loved it. And then got involved in doing various fringe productions around London. And then people were saying, why are you even going to go to drama school? You don't need to, you're already doing it. And I was like, no, because I really want to. I just felt like I needed to, to do that. I'd have maybe a chip on my shoulder if I didn't, I wasn't sure. But I think the thing was just like going to drama school, 3 solid years of not having to think about anything else, just immersing yourself. That was the brilliant
thing.
You got grants. Yeah, really.
I mean, it must be hell. Well, it is hell for my kids.
My son's playing it. Well, he will.
Huge student loan. It was a golden time, really, for us, I think.
Yeah.
It was.
And not to write you off, being in your 60s, but... There's still plenty of life left in you. Do you have any idea what's coming up next for you? Or?
I think I did.
What can you reveal, I guess?
Well, no surprise. I think I'm probably going to do Into the Woods again, which was done at Bath, which was a sort of tryout, really, with Terry Gilliam's production of Into the Woods, and that's coming back, I think, at Christmas. So I'd quite like to be getting down into my garden doing my raised beds, really, between now and then. But,
where's that happening?
That's happening probably later this year.
Yeah, so
it's always lovely if there is something. But anything can happen as well, and you know, it might not, but we
Yeah, of course.
I don't know. I'm just finishing off doing various voiceover stuff for Sky documentaries that I do. And possibly, actually, there's a producer in Suffolk who I've worked with a couple of times. She does, her and her husband do various films. I've done 2 with them. And she phoned me up in January saying, are you free end of February to do this World War II film? And I was like, yeah. And then I had to get back and say, actually, I'm not. I'm doing this play.
Yes.
And I just found out that that's now being postponed till May. So hopefully I'll be doing that.
Yeah.
Mm.
But things come out of the blue all the time.
It's the very nature of the game, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
Unpredictability.
Yeah.
Right, well, I think that's probably about all I need anyway. So I wish you the best of luck with the rest of the run.
Cheers, thank you.
So there we have it. That was the lovely Gillian and Michael, stars of The Children by Lucy Kirkwood at Theatre Royal Bury St Edmunds. Now, if you want to catch this extraordinary production, which also features the magnificent presence of Imogen Stubbs, it's on until the 25th of March, and tickets are available via theatreroyal.org. Now, if my opinion matters to you, and it likely doesn't, but as I mentioned at the outset, you can read what I thought of the production in full on my website, eatpod.co.uk. The Children was one of a few productions I've seen lately, so there's some other reviews you can read if you're interested, including the English touring opera's production of Lucrezia Borgia. I'm putting out a new, more official episode of the podcast in its standard format tomorrow, featuring Spinning Wheel Theatre, so do check that out, as well as the previous episode featuring Hertfordshire's AMA Theatre, if you're interested. Anyway, in the meantime, take care of yourselves and go watch The Children at Theatre Royal Bury St Edmunds. Bye!